Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here. Welcome back to Tesla Daily after hopefully a nice long weekend for many of you. I hope everybody made it through Lumbargate yesterday without a Tesla Daily episode. If you're not sure what I'm talking about yet with that, we'll of course be discussing that in this episode. We also have updates on Tesla's move to Pure Vision, some first reports on how that's going, a minor postponement of the Plaid Model S delivery event, a couple of product updates, Tesla's interest in the restaurant business, and a couple other stories as well. Somehow we are already now in June. Tesla stock starting off the last month of Q2 down 0.2%, pretty quiet on the day, to $623.90. That compared to the NASDAQ also down slightly, 0.1%. We'll start off here just quickly on the lumbar support topic. This caused quite a bit of stir this weekend as somebody on Reddit took delivery of a new Model Y and noticed that on the passenger seat, the lumbar support control had been removed. So that's the area of the seat that would support your lower back. Previously, you could move that up or down, in or out. And Tesla has decided to remove that from the new Model 3 and Model Y, again for the passenger seat only. Driver's seat still has the control. So understandably, pretty disappointing for a customer to have to find that. Someone was expressing disappointment on this on Twitter, saying they don't like the direction Tesla's going, raising prices of vehicles, but removing features like lumbar for the Model Y. On top of rumors of FSD increase to $14,000 without any real added features, do FSD unless you're a beta tester. Elon replied to that, saying, quote, "Moving lumbar was removed only in front passenger seat of 3/Y, obviously not there in rear seats. Logs showed almost no usage. Not worth cost/mass for everyone when almost never used. Prices increasing due to major supply chain price pressure industry-wide, raw materials especially." End quote. We'll talk about the pricing component in a second, but my personal thoughts on the lumbar situation. My first thought is that it's just kind of tough to assess decisions like this from the outside. We don't have the data that Elon Musk is referring to there, which is pretty valuable. Elon's tweet is vague, but they should have pretty good data to analyze this decision. Let's say that 90% of vehicles, for example, hypothetically, have never touched the passenger lumbar support control. Something like that would be pretty strong support for a decision like this. I've seen a lot of people suggesting that Tesla's data might not be valid because, of course, there would be no usage because this is a feature that maybe you set once and then forget about, especially if you consistently have the same passenger in that seat like a spouse. But if most people are never even adjusting it at all, that wouldn't apply. And I'm quite sure that Tesla would consider the frequency of having a passenger in their analysis. And remember here too, they're not taking away lumbar support itself, they're just taking away the adjustability of it. So Tesla can look at the most common settings. If there happens to not be a lot of variation there, Tesla can put the default close to that and still please the majority of the people that are even adjusting it in the first place. The other critical considerations that we just don't have a good understanding of externally, as Elon mentioned here, are cost and mass. Obviously, if given the choice to have this included for free, everybody would take it, but what if it comes at the expense of some of your range, some of your handling, and actually does add cost to the vehicle? At what point does the customer decide, maybe not? Tesla's made the decision, with the help of analytics, that this feature is just not important enough to customers to justify the real or opportunity costs on the Model 3 and the Model Y. For customers that do really highly value that feature, enough to do more than just complain about it missing, well, they can opt up to a Model S or a Model X, or they can look for an alternative brand. Is that going to perfectly cater to every customer's individual needs? Definitely not, but Tesla is not and does not need to try to do that. It would be great to have that as a premium option for those people that do want that, but one of the things that Tesla has learned is the value of simplicity when it comes to manufacturing. Adding that in even as an option, technically that's going to add costs across every single vehicle. So again, without having all the data, I don't think we can make a full assessment externally on the merit of this decision. I think it's likely that Tesla did make the right call on the removal of the feature. Where I would have a complaint is how this was communicated, because inarguably it does create a poor customer experience for those that were expecting a feature and then had it not delivered. The importance or lack thereof of that specific feature is really not the point. The poor experience, which in this case could be easily avoided, is. Now, is this specific instance going to matter to anybody in 6 months? Probably not. The question is this symptomatic of a larger issue, which may eventually cause problems? And I think this would not be the first time that that question has surfaced. There's never a great way to make a customer feel good about taking something away, but I think if you let them know ahead of time, the experience as a whole is probably better. With Tesla making these changes on the fly, it's probably tough to know when something like that is critical enough to communicate, and it doesn't necessarily do anyone any good to call attention to something that they might not have cared about if you hadn't said anything. So I don't think it's a super simple black and white situation, but for something like this that people are probably going to notice, my recommendation would just be that as soon as you make the call on this, put a little notice on the interior page of the design studio that says orders placed after X date may not include adjustable passenger lumbar support. That allows Tesla to work through that transition period where a car may or may not have it. Tesla's not necessarily sure, doesn't want to deal with figuring it out. Some customers will get it, be pleasantly surprised, some won't, but they would have known about it ahead of time. And in that interim period, hey, you've got a nice little demand incentive to get people to lock in an order and try and get that feature. So overall, no, I don't think this is a really big deal. I doubt many customers are going to make their ordering decision one way or the other based on this. But I do think it's the latest example of communications that could have been handled a little bit better from Tesla's end. On a more positive end of the spectrum, and the last thing on seats, I promise, somebody on Twitter did point out that the fact that Tesla could view the logs for the passenger seat also meant they could probably offer saved presets for the passenger seats, said they hope that's coming soon, and Elon replied saying, agreed. So it could be a nice addition someday, which of course, Tesla tends to get a lot less credit for than when something goes away. Perfect example being the heated steering wheel on the Model 3 and the Model Y. I didn't get that. I missed that by a couple months. No hard feelings, but sorry, passengers. I do think I would trade the passenger lumbar support control for that heated steering wheel. Anyway, moving on from that, let's quickly go back to the second part of that tweet. As I mentioned, Elon talking about increasing prices due to supply chain cost challenges and raw materials costs, both factors that we've been discussing as Tesla's been doing these every other week price increases. So not surprising to see Elon mention that. Just as a quick check for where things are at so far, aluminum year to date is up 22%. Nickel, for example, up 9%, lithium 90%, just a few examples there, but we can see variable in magnitude generally increasing. But I do think Tesla's high demand and a potentially looming EV tax credit have also been factors that Elon probably is less likely to highlight, and we'll get more insight on that in about a month and a half with Tesla's Q2 earnings report. All right, next up here, I wanted to go back to a topic we discussed at length last week, Tesla's shift towards pure vision away from utilizing radar. We're now starting to see deliveries of the 3 and the Y without radar, so people are reporting on their experience with autopilot. One of the most popular threads on the Tesla Motors subreddit this weekend was about one such experience, and this person was not having a good experience so far. They were testing in rain as well as just on wet roads without rain. They were limited down to about 55 miles per hour, which they didn't feel was safe on this road, and unfortunately that was a limit on traffic where cruise control as well as auto steer, so they didn't even have cruise control available above that speed. Once the rain let up, they tried again, and it worked okay for a minute, but they got a phantom braking event shortly thereafter, which is interesting to see. The idea or the hope is that those go away with the shift away from radar, but regardless, shortly thereafter, their speed was again limited, despite the fact that it had stopped raining, though the roads were still wet. I don't think they said, but I think that part was during the day, and then they said that on the way back, it was worse. Say it was about 3 a.m., and the auto high beams were flashing on and off at almost every sign, so they weren't happy with that experience. Basically, at the end of the day, they summed it up by saying, either way, it was unequivocally a worse experience than my old one, and wasn't even particularly close. So, I just wanted to share that, share some of my thoughts. This is very reminiscent of when Tesla switched over from so-called Autopilot version 1 to Autopilot version 2. That was when Tesla brought it in-house and first actually introduced Tesla Vision. And for quite a long period of time, maybe 9 months, maybe a year, Autopilot version 2 was really not as good as Autopilot version 1. Maybe better in some circumstances, worse in some others towards the end there. But over time, version 2 kept improving and at a certain point, very clearly passed version 1. So anybody that followed Tesla and lived through that period of time, I think this is unsurprising and also unconcerning, especially because Tesla did give us a heads up in that Tesla Vision update post that things may be limited here at first, particularly at high speeds, Tesla saying there that the limit would be 75 miles per hour for some period of time here. And it's also definitely not surprising to see more limitations, less confidence in poor weather scenarios early on here as Tesla is still collecting data and validating the safety across the fleet. So based on that Autopilot 2 experience, I do think it's going to take probably a little bit longer to get to parity than what people would like. I'm sure Tesla's hoping to have that done in a couple of weeks. I would set my expectations for longer, and we'll probably see some areas where it performs better, some where it performs worse. And without a doubt, worse performance will get unequivocally more attention and more voice until it's absolutely better across the board. So just something to kind of think about, be aware of during this transition period. I've already seen, you know, people saying they're not going to take delivery of a no radar car, not saying we don't need to pay attention to these things and those kind of reports, but it is really important to try to really understand what is signal, what is noise, and not overreact to things that can be overamplified simply because they are negative. I think Andre Karpathy, in a tweet a few days ago, captured the microcosm that really is this situation well, replying to a thread basically arguing that if cameras plus neural nets can get close to human performance right now, then inevitably it won't be long until they're able to supersede human performance. Andre replied to that saying, quote, "Yes, vision is extremely information-rich. 8x surround, 1.2 megapixels at 36 hertz, is a lot of constraints on state of the world, can be processed at 10x better latencies than what human meat computer can ever hope for. We live in a funny sliver of time where it's a contest," end quote. I think that funny sliver of time comment is a great way of phrasing that, and it really can apply to so many things that Tesla does. With as fast as Tesla moves and as willing as they are to make changes, you tend to end up in those funny slivers of time a lot more frequently. Overall, just a good reminder of perspective, zooming out, and not getting mired down in the inevitable ups and downs along the journey. Speaking of those ups and downs kind of coinciding both in the same instance here, we are going to have to wait one more week for the Plaid Model S delivery event. Elon announced overnight on Friday that they do need one more week to tweak, so they have delayed the delivery event from June 3rd to Thursday, June 10th. He did, however, confirm that Tesla will be doing a live stream for that event, so we'll have that to look forward to next week. Speaking of the refreshed S and X, we do now have confirmation of what is going to be powering that 10 teraflops of processing power in these vehicles. AMD's CEO Lisa Su announced yesterday at AMD's keynote at Computex 2021 that AMD is supplying Tesla for the new Model S and X with a Ryzen APU to power the infotainment system, as well as a discrete RDNA 2-based GPU to run AAA games. So not too surprising given the comparisons that we've obviously seen with the PS5 or the next generation Xbox. Pretty similar hardware. Tesla's may be a little bit scaled down on some elements there, but still crazy powerful, especially for a car, should offer plenty of longevity. And obviously, most people know this, but just as a reminder, this is for infotainment, not for FSD. Tesla, of course, even on the refreshed S and X, still using the internally designed FSD hardware manufactured by, I believe, Samsung. Next here, just kind of rounding out the tweets from Elon. This one I wanted to make sure got some attention. Elon replying to a tweet about Tesla's casting machines, saying, quote, "Making this work has been, slash still is, super difficult, but it's a revolution in car body design and production. Lighter, tighter, better NVH, higher precision, lower capex, lower unit cost," end quote. So far, I think we have tended to see the impacts of this taken for granted, because we haven't seen them show up in a fully appreciable way in the earnings reports yet. Obviously, the Model Y is the first vehicle to take advantage of this, and it's really only the rear castings right now. And the Model Y itself has been still ramping up, but the casting process even more recently, that's only been happening about the last 9 months or so. So all those improvements that Elon has mentioned there, those are still, to some extent, hiding under the covers. They haven't really shown up in the financials yet, but the average number of castings per vehicle delivered is about to skyrocket over the next couple of years as Tesla goes from rear casting to both rear and front casting, and a bigger portion of Tesla's deliveries begin to utilize those casted parts. So I'm excited to see those benefits realized and become more clear. As for that abbreviation that Elon used there, NVH, that just stands for noise, vibration, and harshness. Next here is an article from the Wall Street Journal, which I would have discussed a little bit earlier in the episode, but it did come out as I was recording. But they are reporting that the SEC, quote, "told Tesla Inc. last year that chief executive Elon Musk's use of Twitter had twice violated a court-ordered policy requiring his tweets to be pre-approved by company lawyers, according to records obtained by the Wall Street Journal," end quote. The first tweet in question was back in July of 2019, Elon replying on Solar Roof, saying, quote, "spooling up production line rapidly, hoping to manufacture about 1,000 solar roofs per week by the end of this year," end quote, which is a disappointing tweet to reflect on regardless, but the SEC felt that fell under the production numbers or sales or delivery numbers that was part of the settlement stipulation. And because of that, I think this is one of the rare instances where they probably would actually have a decent case. Pending if that had been discussed previously, Tesla argued that that was wholly aspirational, so didn't require authorization, pre-approval. I think Elon had discussed that volume target before, so I don't think I took it as news. I looked back at my episode that day and only spent, I don't know, like 40 seconds on that, which if that had been some sort of breaking new announcement, I probably would have spent a little bit more time discussing. And then the second tweet, which I've already shared my thoughts on this one, I don't think there's any case for this one, but they were not happy with Elon's tweet back in May last year saying, quote, "Tesla stock price is too high, IMO," end quote. At the end of the day, probably not all that important aside from obviously this is going to generate a lot of headlines right now, but remember this happened last year. The Wall Street Journal just reporting on it now because of a Freedom of Information Act request, but they wrap up the article by saying, quote, "the feud appears to have ended in a stalemate without further consequence to Tesla or Mr. Musk, the correspondence suggests. Tesla's lawyers argued against the SEC's claims about the tweets, and the SEC never went back to court to ask a judge to intervene." The SEC ended a June 2020 letter with a request, quote, "We urge the company to reconsider its positions in this matter by acting to implement and enforce disclosure controls and procedures to prevent further shareholder harm," end quote. So basically, they just left this as a warning, and they'll keep those couple of tweets in their back pocket to build a case if they ever feel it's necessary to do so in the future. All right, next up here, a little bit more fun. A trademark disclosure today has shown that Tesla has applied for trademark registration, quote, "intended to cover the categories of restaurant services, pop-up restaurant services, self-service restaurant services, and takeout restaurant services," end quote. So not the first time we've heard these ideas around Tesla. Elon tweeting back in 2018 that they want to put in a drive-in, roller skates, and a rock restaurant at one of the new superchargers in LA. Looks like part of that, based on a tweet a couple months back, may be coming to Santa Monica. Elon saying that they're hoping to have a 50s diner and 100 best movie clips playing there in a new supercharger. And of course, we've seen Tesla's little lounge slash cafe idea at the Kettleman City supercharger. So it's kind of cool to see Tesla evaluating this space. I don't think they're going to make a huge move in this area. And regardless of the level of interest, it's probably a good idea to lock the trademark up anyway. It's kind of fun to imagine a Tesla lounge at every supercharger, but I think the reality is that the use case for that is probably just not entirely necessary, especially as charging rates increase and entertainment options in the vehicle increase as well. All right, last couple of items here. First up on safety, this is super interesting. A company over in the UK sent a Freedom of Information Request Act over there to the Department of Transportation to find out which vehicles were involved in the most accidents and the least accidents per 10,000 vehicles. So breaking it down by manufacturer, in the top 10 in terms of most accidents per 10,000 vehicles, the closest comparisons to Tesla are probably Mercedes-Benz and BMW. They come in at 6th and 8th, with 259 and 224 accidents, respectively, per 10,000 vehicles. Tesla actually makes the list of the least number of accidents per 10,000 vehicles, showing up at 3rd, with just 28 accidents per 10,000 vehicles, almost 1/10 the frequency of BMW and Mercedes. Sure, Tesla's fleet over that time span is definitely made up of newer vehicles, but that is a huge, huge difference that I don't think can be fully explained by that reason. Overall, Tesla had the third fewest accidents per 10,000 vehicles, following Morris and Austin, then sitting ahead of Ferrari, Aston Martin, Lotus, Bentley, Infiniti, Maserati, and Abarth. So aside from Infiniti and maybe a couple of others there, you're not really seeing year-round daily drivers here, like you're seeing with Tesla, and obviously the accident rates per amount of time are going to be a lot lower on those vehicles, and even per mile, which this isn't looking at, is probably going to be lower as well just because of the conditions they're usually driven in. Even Infiniti here, they're coming in at 105 accidents per 10,000 vehicles, so about 4 times the rate of Tesla. So super impressive numbers there, and supports some of the accident data that Tesla releases in their quarterly safety report. All right, lastly today, just a quick but important update on the Ford F-150 Lightning. Remember, we talked last week about the opening price point version being the F-150 Lightning Pro, targeted at commercial customers. This has caused a little bit of confusion on whether retail customers can actually order that version. Ford's product communications manager for North America said that retail and fleet customers can both reserve the Ford F-150 Lightning Pro, but there have been reports that that does not apply to the extended range version of the Lightning Pro. So Ford's North American communications manager for commercial vehicles also replied to this Twitter thread, saying that the standard range is available to order for both retail and commercial customers. Extended range is for commercial customers exclusively. Just referring to the Lightning Pro there, of course, you can still get the extended range if you option up the other retail versions. So if my understanding is correct, retail customers can order everything except for the extended range Lightning Pro, which seems like a weird exclusion. You would think they would exclude the standard range. If anything, that probably would have lower margins. So they must have some other reason there, which to me is pretty unclear. But I guess for a retail customer, if you do want that 300-mile range, it's going to be an option on the XLT, which starts at around 52 or 53,000. And we don't know for sure what the extended range is going to cost on that, but I think the New York Times had said somewhere between 57 and 58,000. So obviously in the future that could change, but did just want to update on where things are on that today. And with that, I think we are all caught up. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And I'll see you tomorrow for the Wednesday, June 2nd episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.